in the true nature of N.A. and the passing of the torch, Jack W. is going to come up and introduce our next speaker.
I'm an addict. My name's Jack.
Okay, I have the honor and the privilege of introducing my friend Terry, who currently lives in Heber, Utah. And he will tell you about some things that are just really lighten you up and make you feel glad you're a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And like, and so without further ado, Terry R. from Heber, Utah.
How you doing? My name's Terry. I'm an addict. And they asked me to come here, and I was like Jack. I was surprised. They asked me to share in the history of Narcotics Anonymous in New York City and how it started. And I'm like Jack. You know, it was none of my business what God does with my life. It was just I was in the right time at the right place. I got clean in that other fellowship. And I was always like, felt like a moral leper. And I always felt like, oh, you're one of those. You know, and my aunt was in that other fellowship. And I went down to Florida for her 25th year anniversary. And I got clean in the penitentiary. And when I was in the penitentiary, I was writing to one of my old running partners, this girl, Maureen. And when she got out, she got clean in the joint, and I got clean in the joint. And when I went down for my aunt's 25th anniversary, I left my aunt, and I went down to Lauderdale. And I met Maureen, and she took me to an AA meeting. And then the next thing she says that night, she says, you want to go to an NA meeting? And what the fuck is N.A.? I had no clue. And it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I walked through the door, and she introduced me to this guy, Paul E. And I had a year and a half clean, and he asked me to speak at my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You know, and it was just like, you know, and I was told never to say no. I said, okay. And it was like the miracle happened that night. There was a guy, Joe, there. He had 10 years clean at the time, and he never drank alcohol. He was a strict dope fiend. And I was amazed. And I kept going to meetings. It was like three of us in New York at the time, and people kept saying, you got to go back to New York, and you got to start this. You got to go back. And like, I'm thinking, do they really know who they're talking to? You know, at the time, I couldn't walk and chew bubble gum. You know, and I was lucky I was clean. And I left there, and I went back to New York. I had no intentions to start any NA meeting, nothing. You know, I was at the meeting of the other fellowship, and one of these old fogies started saying, you know, he was sharing, saying these goddamn drug addicts are taking over a meeting. They don't belong here, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I raised my hand and I said, I don't know how. I said, I don't know where. But I'm going to start the first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in the city. And at the time, we had a meeting of the other fellowship. It was called Both Sides of the Coin. And it was like a special interest group for addicts where we could talk about drugs without getting our heads cut off. And we lost our meeting place, and I went to the church across the street from my aunt and asked them, and before they said okay, and before I got back to the meeting, they already found a place. So when I got back from Florida and this started happening, I went across the street to he was Father Valero now, and now he's like Bishop Valero or something. And I asked him, and he says, yeah, sure. And we started our first meeting. I think I had two pamphlets, and we had like 17 people from that other Both Sides of the Coin meeting, and it just started, you know. And we didn't know it was a God thing, really, you know. And even in the beginning, you know, it was like we didn't have any literature, and people would come in with literature from the other fellowship and try and put it on. And I'd walk over and I'd say, do me a favor, take it off the table, it doesn't belong here. And they say, well, you know, one thing is the same as the other. And, you know, I'd say, okay, and I walk over to, and I grab their literature, and I rip it up, and I throw it in the garbage. You know, and we were going on for about, I think, 2 months. And I was working as I was the alcohol counselor in a methadone clinic. And one of the other counselors said they started an NA meeting up in the Bronx. I said, no, where? He said, I don't know. I just heard it. So for like 2 or 3 weeks, I kept asking the school, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? So finally, he told us where it was. And we had maybe 15, 20 people coming to the first meeting. And then we found out where that was. And we took a caravan up to the Bronx. And we busted in this meeting. This guy, Henry M., was there. He started a meeting. And I said, hi, I'm Terry from the awareness group in Queens. And I said, what's the name of your group? He says, Narcotics Anonymous. I said, no, man, you got to get a name for this because we're going to have these all over the city. You know, because that was my vision then. Because I found a home. I found a place that people didn't treat me like a piece of shit. You know, and I wasn't one of those anymore. I was one of us. You know? And at about that time, we didn't have any literature. I started working to writing letters to the World Service Office, and they sent me these beginner kits, 7 IPs and a white book. You know, so at the time when Form was working in the office then, and I wrote a letter to whom it may concern. It would be easier for me to get an ounce of pure heroin from my old fucking connection than it would be to get literature from you fucking people. In loving service, Terry R. And if you don't like it, I'll meet you in the parking lot at the Leather Grove Convention in Miami. And like 2 weeks went by and I get a phone call and Terry Ryan, that's here. He says, you don't know me, but my name is Jimmy Kemen. He says, I'm the manager of the World Service Office, and since we got your letter, we know Narcotics Anonymous is going to grow and flourish in New York City. And we just sent you $500 worth of literature. Pay us when you can. And that's the way it was back then. And even before we paid that $500 off, they sent us another $500. You know, and it got us started. And, well, there's a story before that also that, like, with those few IPs we had, I took them to a printer and I printed up a whole bunch of literature. It was just as good, maybe even better than theirs. Because, you know, I would go to any length that no addict dies seeking recovery, you know, and it was cool, you know, it was just, I was going through, like, both fellowships then, and I was an old-timer in New York, I had a year and a half clean, you know, and I had to make the decision then, whether I went to both fellowships or I went to one fellowship. And at that point, I made the decision just to go to one fellowship because in my mind, I was thinking that if I go somewhere else, I'm telling you, NA doesn't work. You know? And to this day, I still go to one fellowship. And it's worked for me. And after the first meeting in New York was the awareness group at Blessed Sacrament Church in Jackson Heights, Queens on 35th Avenue and 93rd Street. The second meeting was the Getting Straight group. It was also, for instance, at Blessed Sacrament School and 1141 Taylor Avenue in the Bronx. And from there we started meetings and I have copies of one of the first meeting listeners says 2 meetings have done their work. Now there are 8. We had three meetings in the Bronx, two in Queens, and three in Manhattan. And Jimmy Cannon was a big part of what happened in New York City. You know, I would get a phone call from Jimmy, and he called me one day, he says, there's a place on 113th Street in Harlem looking for a meeting. You know, so I just got up, went there, and we started the first meeting in Harlem. We didn't give a shit what color you were. You know, I topped dope in Harlem, I shot dope in Harlem, I lived in Harlem. You know, it didn't matter. You know, we went up and we started the meetings, and then we started area service. Me and Henry went to, I think it was the second East Coast Convention, which was a great institution while it lasted. And I remember, I said, Henry, we got to go to this thing, you know? He says, why? I said, well, I think it was in Jersey, Pennsylvania. I says, we got to go up there. He says, why? I said, well, we're going to meet some dope things that used to sit on milk cans, tie up with cow's tails, and shoot dope. And he just started laughing, and we went up there, and it was my first experience. I've never seen so many clean addicts in my life, and there's 308 people there. You know, and then I started to meet different people, and then we started people calling. A woman named Nona B. from Salinas, California, called me up. She says, Harry, I'm coming to New York. Could you find me one of the women in the fellowship that I could stay with? And we didn't have too many women back then. And Nona came, and I said, you can stay in my house. And she came. We had a great time. And we had to speak up at the Bronx. And at this time, we didn't know that you couldn't share if you were loaded. You know, we were clueless. I mean, definitely clueless. And we had, at this time, a lot of methadone clinics starting to send their clients to us. And she spoke and says, you can't speak, if, you know, share if you're loaded. So we had a business meeting up in the Bronx, and we made a motion that you can't share if you're loaded. And we had some guys from AA coming in, and we said, you know, this is, you know, California was like the last word in the world at that time, you know. You can't do it. And guys from AA, we don't care what they say, and, you know, in a business meeting, you had people nodding on methadone and heroin, you know, like voting for it. And at this time, Henry, who was the chair of the meeting, he turned around and he says, I resign. You know, and then somebody said, well, who's going to make the coffee? And they said, Terry. And we only had two meetings in New York at this time. And I stood up. I said, as far as I'm concerned, this is not Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And with that, me, Henry, Tony D, and this other guy walked up. We grabbed all the literature, took the sign, and we walked out. You know, and that meeting folded 2 weeks later. And another meeting started at 800 Morris Park. And things started clicking. And it's like we didn't know what we were doing. And then we started another meeting. It was... I forget the name, but we didn't have people in 90 days. We had Lino and Papo, two Puerto Ricans. They were cousins, Lino and Papo. Lino had 30 days, Papo had 60 days. You're the chair, and you're the coffee maker. And what we would do, we would go and start meetings, and once they started going a little, we'd go and start another one. And then I got a call from a kid that just came back from Georgia. He was in treatment there. And at that time, my house was the hotline, the hotline. He called up. He says, is there Narcotics Anonymous in New York? I says, yeah. And I told him where the two meetings were, and he started going. And I got from that priest, Bishop Valero, I got in contact with New York Catholic Substance Abuse Program, whatever it was. And this priest, Terry Atkins, turned me on to another priest in Midtown Manhattan, and we started the Midtown Connection. And like they had an AA meeting there, and the priest was really enthusiastic because they had like 8 people coming at the AA meeting. And the first week we had our meeting at the Midtown Convention, it was like 15 people, and the priest was like really overwhelmed with it. He said, "This is great." He came back 2 months later, there was like 50 people in the room. You know, and we were just like Johnny Appleseed. Like, people would ask us, you know, could we want to start a meeting? We go start a meeting, and that's the way it was, man. It's just, we just get a coffee pot and start a meeting because we had a love, man. You know, too many like addicts were dying in New York, and like nobody knew about us. You know, and then there's the thing where like people say, "Well, they didn't start NA in New York because of the Rockefeller law." That's bullshit. We didn't know, and we wouldn't care. You know, lock us up. Fuck you. You know, that's the way we, you know, and we were real willful. You know, we would do anything and everything we can. I went around, I worked at a place, and I had nothing to do. I'd sit there and type up the hotline number on these stickums, and I'd go slapping them on every telephone booth I saw. You know, and I had the telephone company calling up the hotline telling us we couldn't do that anymore. You know? And it's just things we did. And we went down to the Lower East Side and we'd hand out literature. And I'd be driving in Manhattan, you know, those guys that wash the windows. They wash my windows and I'd hand them a meeting schedule. You know, and they'd be cursing me out. And we went anywhere and everywhere. We tried to get meetings. And at that time, I mean, trying to get drug addicts into detox was almost impossible. You know, about this time we had an office and a hotline, and people would be coming down there, and we'd have addicts that are sick, and we're trying to, there was only a few places. One was on 59th Street, and we'd have to stick them out in the alleyway and give them like a half a pint of booze, tell them, "Drink this." And they would drink it, and we'd take them to this detox, and like half the times they refused them. They said, "No, that guy's a drug addict. We can see it," you know. And then that's the way it was. And a lot of people kicked on our couches, you know, a lot of people. And it was great. And the way we started the area service, I came back from East Coast Convention, and people told me about area service, and you got to start this. And, you know, I wanted to do everything. I said, "Henry, we got to start this area service." He says, "How do we do it?" I said, "Well, I'll be the chairman, and you'll be the co-chairman. We're going to meet next Saturday at my house." And that's how we started it. You know, we had a little answering machine, and we started the Clean and Serene group in Queens. There was the first step meeting in New York City. It was St. Nick's and Parson Boulevard and Union Turnpike in Queens. You know, and we were just having people, and it was just like we were having such an influx of people. And a lot of people from that other fellowship were starting to send people to us. And it was wonderful. And we were starting to have little dances, you know, and fundraisers. And I went to that world convention in Miami. It was me and Henry. And I put in the token bid for the 13th World Convention. We had 2 meetings, you know, and when Milwaukee came up, we had 10 meetings. And I was talking to them, to like, "Let's go and put in the bid," you know, and they thought I was crazy. You know, it's because none of them ever been to a World Convention or convention. You know, it was kind of like trying to tell somebody what your first shot of dope was like. And they wouldn't listen to me. And there was the guy, Bobby Bonds, from Philadelphia at the time, at Area Service. And, like, he got in and talked them into it. And I flew to Milwaukee. And the other 7 people drove to Milwaukee. And you had to have all these letters and stuff. And we had somebody working at the mayor's office. And they stole some of the letterheads. And we typed up a letter. I flew to the mayor's. New York City's name. We had all this bullshit statistics and hotels we had, and Sally Evans was there. She was representing Southern California, and when we put in the bid, and it's like I talked about, the addicts in New York didn't know about loving God and recovery and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And everybody that had a bid in, most of them withdrew, except Southern California. But we still won, hands down. And like we only had 10 meetings, and we did this convention on a wing and a prayer. And Doreen was one of our speakers at the time, and like I've always been controversial, I had a big mouth, and at the negotiations at the hotel refused to even talk to us if I was in the room. I got a hammer. Diana told this guy he was full of shit because he promised this, not like they wouldn't deal with me anymore. But these are the things we did, man. It was just like we took care of each other. You know, we started the first H&I meeting in St. John's Hospital out in Rockaway. Then we started two H&I meetings in the methadone clinic I was working. And we got 50 people clean out of that methadone clinic in 2 years. You know. And back then, people were in the trenches. You know, you got involved, man. You did something. You know, and today what I see is I don't see people in the trenches. I don't see people volunteer to do H&I work. I don't see people kicking down the doors to hospitals to do PI work. I don't see any of that. I see them kicking down the doors to get the convention committee meetings. You know, it's all about money, power, prestige, let's have a party. You know, what about the son of a bitches that are sitting in detox or the kids in treatment centers? All those guys doing five to ten in the penitentiary. You know, they deserve Narcotics Anonymous as much as we do. You know, and it's, that's, you know, I talked about my vision. My vision is maybe start getting back into the old ways. And if you sponsor people, get them into the trenches. You know, if they want to be on a convention committee, slap them in the fucking head. You know, because the spiritual part of this program is one addict helping another. It ain't about selling T-shirts. You know? I think conventions are wonderful and they have their place, but I think, you know, we should have priorities. In every area and region have a priority list. What's on the top of your priority, convention or H&I? Carrying a message or bullshit, you know, and I'm still controversial. I can't, you know, it's like, fuck you if you can't take a joke, you know, and after that convention, the World Convention in New York City, we went from having 10 meetings to 2 months later we had 50 meetings, and it was starting to stretch up into upstate New York, Poughkeepsie, and then all of a sudden we were up in Albany, the ABC area, and it's like we were stretching out, and it was great. You know, and I've done a lot of crazy things. You know, I remember one time they threw me up to New York region, you know, and I was the RSR alternate, and I was homesick, and, you know, it was like the old ways. You know, conning, manipulation, and service. It was more like regional circus. Instead of regional service, and they threw me off. I remember they threw me off. I was homesick. First time I ever missed it. You know, I couldn't defend myself. And my girlfriend in time that lived with me, she was the H&I chair, and my friends that came home, they wouldn't even tell me. You know, because one of my friends, Tony, was part of it. And I was nuts at that time. You know, and then when they told me, I was really outraged. I was going to burn Tony's car and the chairman. I was going to put a few bullets over his head. And, you know, it's just, I didn't do it. It was going through my head. And I called up Jimmy. And I said, Jimmy, they just threw me up the region. He started laughing at me. I'm devastated. And he's, I said, what the fuck are you laughing at? He says, I don't feel so all alone now. Because they threw him out of the office.
Yeah.
You know, and he was my mentor. He was my hero. You know, I remember calling Jimmy and talking to him, and he said, Terry, do this. I remember calling up, and I was ranting and raving about something that was going on, a violation of the traditions or something. And one of the best things Jimmy said, hey, Terry, just sit back and watch the cartoons. You know, and it's like for 24 years at times, I just sit back and watch the cartoons. Some of the cartoons in Narcotics Anonymous are better than Looney Tunes. You know, and it's just, you got to let things go, man. And I'm glad that era when Jimmy got thrown out of office is over. You know, and I was at the conference last year, and it was like, it was a little bit into half in the new and half in the old. And I really think that Narcotics Anonymous is going to change and grow. You know, that many, no addict may die seeking anywhere on this fucking planet. You know, it's not just the United States, it's other countries. You know, and in our convention last year, we put a box up. We have a raffle, and we put a box up, and we put India on it. And whoever didn't like their T-shirt when they won a raffle, they could put it in that box. We filled that box and we sent it to India. You know, that's the things we should do instead of having big conventions, having circuit speakers. I think they should ban all circuit speakers. You know, I think it's more that like you should search and get people that have time and have recovery. You know, the people that are humble, that, you know, you got to break their balls to get them to speak. You know, and it means a lot to have, you know, somebody carrying a message. You know, something that comes from the heart that reaches the heart. You know, not that somebody's got a script that where if they're in L.A. and they play their tape when they're in Las Vegas and you got stereo. You know, and it's like, I like to hear people that walk the walk. You know, not ones that talk the talk but don't walk the walk. You know, the ones that are in the trenches and, you know, just... How do I stay clean today? You know, how can I help another addict? You know, I live in a little town now, Bumfuck Heber, in Utah. It's 5,000 people. I got there. There was no meetings. Me and Pam, my better half, we're getting married on the 18th. She has 18 years. We started meeting right in our house. And now we have 3 meetings in Heber. We have 2 H&I meetings. And you know something? We have more women in recovery in all little towns with two men. And that's the first I've ever seen. That is great. You know, and I'm still in the trenches. Until I'm 99 years old, I'll die, I'll still be in the trenches. I still do an H&I meeting. I still carry the message. You know, I'll talk to anybody, anytime. You know, I love this fellowship. And this love I got from this crazy man who just talked to him on the phone. He would never shut the fuck up. Jimmy would talk and talk, and you know, when I would say, Jimmy, shut the fuck up. You know, I wanted to say something, you know. And I remember I call up and I say, how are you, fuck? And he say, hey, how do you do? How do you say, Terry? You know, and I would talk, man. And I love that man. He gave me so much hope and inspiration. And he helped us in New York so much, man. You know, I would give his phone on to other people in the fellowship, and they would call me, and Jimmy was over. And he was there for everybody. A lot of regions across the United States were helped by Jimmy. You know, and there was one point when they locked him out of the office, there was a lot of money missing. You know why? Because Jimmy gave out literature on the cuff. And people didn't pay him back, so they were accusing Jimmy of stealing. That's bullshit. You know, the man's whole life is in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and there's so much, man. It's like, it, also in New York, they threatened to lock me up once. I was the H&I chair, and we ordered so much literature and gave them a check, and we came in there and counted, and we shortchanged. And I had 4 people count to make sure, and... I had people coming from driving like 9 hours from Albany to get literature for H&I meetings, and I wasn't about to let them go back empty-handed. And none of those son of a bitches from the office would come down and give us our literature. So I cracked the lock in the office, and there had an old safe in there. I cracked that, too. I took 1,000 meeting lists. I took the literature they owed us. I wrote a check and a note, closed up the safe, closed up the office, and the next regional meeting they threatened to have me locked up and arrested. And I go, fuck it, lock me up, arrested, I don't care. You know, because I know what it's like to sit in the penitentiary and wait for a meeting. You know, and I know what it's like to have something to read when you go back to your cell. You know, I know what it's like to have something positive to, like, to hold on to, some kind of fucking hope. Because for many years, I was hopeless. When I was 16, my mother took out a life insurance policy on me. She just wanted to have some money to bury me. You know, and that's why I really, my vision is that we get back in the trenches and we get back into helping people and get out of the glory business. You know, these history conferences are wonderful. And you find out about people who did start and who are in the trenches. You know, we had another guy in Connecticut, Danny Sullivan. You know, he was a wonderful guy. Me and him butted heads because we were two lunatics. You know, and Danny died of a heart attack after doing a 12-step call. He came back and knocked on his landlady's door, and he just dropped dead from a heart attack. And his life was Narcotics Anonymous. And none of us were saints back then, and some of us are still not saints, you know? And a lot of people, you know, yeah, it can be controversial and stuff, but one thing, I'll do anything for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, this is a love of, you know, all the stuff I do for Narcotics Anonymous, I couldn't do any of this. I wouldn't have the life I have if you didn't give it to me, if Jimmy wasn't there. You know, and people didn't carry a message into a penitentiary, and people didn't hug me and told me it was all right. Because I remember when I was 9 years clean, and I was going to pick up my coin. I just lost my license. They revoked my registration. I was riding a 10-speed bike. My girlfriend was pregnant. She got an abortion. She cut me loose. You know, like Murphy's Law, everything that could happen would happen. I'm driving to the meeting on a bike. I get hit by a car, fracturing my skull. I got a broken collarbone. And my brother took me home to his house, and I stayed there. And I remember going to a meeting one night, and I was just crying. And, like, I was a tough guy, you know, and just, like, a lot of the people I got clean with and I ran with, they did not act. You know, save my ass, the newcomers. This guy, one guy in Philly said, Terry, stick your 9 years up your ass. Get in my fucking car. We're going to another meeting. Philly had 90 days at that time. And Philly, for the next 2 weeks, took me around like I was his sponsee. He would pick me up and take me, because I was a blubbering idiot, you know. But I didn't get loaded. And like, I've been a lot of things where a lot of friends die, but, you know, we stay here and we fight and we don't give up. And if you're shoplifting in Narcotics Anonymous, shame on you. Shoplifting is coming, taking, and not giving back. And if you're cheap, you know, when a basket comes around and you stick that dollar in there like it's something, you can't even buy a goddamn gallon of gas with a dollar or a cup of coffee. You know what I love? It's like you see people come in with a new Lexus or a Mercedes and they have I-O-N-A bumper sticker. They come in with a triple butterscotch latte that cost them $8. Talking long shit and pontificating on recovery, and a basket comes by and they go, ooh, here's a dollar. Shame on you, man. What's your recovery worth? You know, how much do you love your life? How much do you love your brothers and sisters in recovery? You know, and another vision of mine is, you know, the prejudice in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm fucking tired of it, man. I started the first meeting in Harlem, right? I went to a meeting in New York once, and me and maybe two, three other white people there, and then they circled up, man. There's two guys on both sides of me. I put my arms around them and go like this. It pissed me the fuck off, man. You know, narcotics and drugs don't discriminate. We shouldn't. You know, and I think it's something that should be addressed in areas, regions, home groups. You know, and smack some people in the head when they start fucking around and think they're too good. You know, if a black person comes into an all-white meeting, he's shunned. That's a bitch. Or a Mexican. Or vice versa. White guy goes into a black meeting. What are you going to do? You know, that no addict dies seeking recovery. That's what it's all about. And I think it's wonderful we have all this literature. And I think it's wonderful that, what the World Service Office does. And I think the money they get paid, they, you know, they deserve it. You know, so dig deep, give some money. If you're making money, kick it out. If you're not, you don't have to. Somebody else will. And I don't have much to say. You know, New York grew. It just grew so fast. I remember when we had 25 people in the fellowship, and then it came to a time I didn't hardly know anybody. You know, and I go once, back once or twice every couple of years, and New York will always be my home, and I'll always have the fond memories of what we did and how we started and the love I had and all the people that died clean, you know, from the virus, hepatitis C, you know, and the struggles, and they stay clean. You know, this is a wonderful fellowship. You know, and what's happened in the past and the history, there are a lot of black marks. You know, we had a lot of fanatics. We were all fanatics in our own way. Let's stop that. Let's come together in love, support each other, and make sure everybody has a chance to stay clean. You know, and that newcomer that walks in the room, man, grab his ass, give him some coffee. Take him out to coffee. You know what Big Shot Narcotics Anonymous is? Somebody will travel 4,000 miles to speak at a convention, but won't walk across the street to take a newcomer to coffee. Thank you.
Anybody have questions for Terry? He'll be glad to address them about the origins of Narcotics Anonymous in New York City.
Yeah, I thought I was getting off easy. Yeah.
My name is Bruce Manicon. Did you mention any year when there came to Bogota?
1981. First meeting started in 1981 in Queens, the Awareness Group. 35th Avenue, 93rd Street.
Thank you. Anyone else? Don't be shy.
Yeah, Terry.
My name's Terry. I just wanted to, do you remember when they served brandy cherries at the banquet in the...
It was something out of a Peter Sellers movie. It's like we're at the 13th World Convention, they're all Cherry's Jubilee. And Rosie beat them, running out, waving their hands, don't eat the cherries! It was just great. You know, we had Dan Egan speak. You know, I got in a lot of trouble with that. I was the one who brought Dan Egan around. And I didn't know he wasn't an addict. You know, somebody said, well, get the junkie priest to speak. And I just thought he was an addict. I said, fuck it, I'll do it. You know, so I got him to speak. And, you know, I opened Pandora's box, and I never heard the end of it. But Dan was a good guy. He helped a lot of people.
My name is Joe Almanatic.
Hey, Joe.
And I just had a question about the Rockefeller laws, just what that was all about. And as far as the 1981, I know that they did exist in early times. You couldn't congregate, things like that. So
yeah. Like, when we were shooting dope, we didn't care. So when we got clean, we didn't care. You know, it's just like the addicts couldn't congregate. You know, I remember I was in a drug program, and this before I really got clean, and I left, and my mother took out a petition. And if they bagged you, you went to the Rockefeller program for like 2 years on that petition. And it was like putting you in jail. You know, but it didn't stop. But, you know, Narcotics Anonymous started because nobody, we didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous until I found out about it in Florida. And then, like, we had a lot of people, after we started the meetings, like this guy Frankie Shannon, he passed away now, he called me up, he said, man, he's just like, he said, I'm originally from Brooklyn, I live in California. He said, I want to come back, and I said, yeah, come on, stay at my house. And, you know, it was just like that. You know, people just started calling up. They wanted to come home. They wanted meetings to go to. And a lot of people were happy that, you know, Narcotics Anonymous finally came to the city. You know, and I started the first meeting, but, you know, it's like I was just in the right place. You know, I'm nobody special. You know, it's none of my business what God does in my life. You know, and it's just, that's it, you know. Anybody else?
I think it might be
interesting
to pick another hotel
where we're interested in. Yeah, it was the Vista Hotel, and it went down with the Trade Center. And it was just strange. I was watching on TV, and one of the first EMTs that showed up was this guy, Juan, from New York, and he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And he wasn't killed, and then there was a guy John C. from Pittsburgh, an iron worker. I was watching TV and I turned around and there's John. He came over to Pittsburgh to help with the cleanup, and we lost quite a few members in those two buildings. You know, but you know, like in New York, they got through it, and it's like anything else we can get through, and it's a sort of thing. And that convention at that time was. That was the most successful world convention to that point. And we made more money. And it's just like a lot of people came back just because they wanted to come home to New York and support us. And some people got loaded at that convention, you know. A few yahoos from Pennsylvania came down and got mugged in 42nd Street, you know, because they stuck out like sore thumbs, you know. And I was in the program room. We had this big ghetto box playing music. Next thing I know, I turn around, the ghetto box is gone, you know. But, you know, shit happens. And it's like anything else. You want to stay clean, you stay clean, you know. And there was, in New York, there was that strong desire. You know, because, you know, the only place we had to go was methadone clinics, KY, or the other fellowship. And a lot of times we weren't welcome there. Or I couldn't relate to those people. You know, I remember getting out of the penitentiary, and I had long hair. I used to wear overalls with no shirts, Italian wingtips with no socks, long feathered earring, you know, and sunglasses. I looked like the connection. You know, and they would tell a newcomer to stay away from him. You know, and I remember these two old-time members of the other fellowship coming over to me and saying, kid, you gotta start dressing more soberly. You know, and the guy had one of these on these polyester suits with white patent leather belt and those patent leather shoes. I says, man, they gave me one of those suits when I got out of the joint. I threw it in the garbage. and one thing I like about NA, you know, what it says in the literature, there's no must in NA. And there's no must way you gotta dress, the way you gotta look, the way you gotta talk. You know, I don't speak a lot of places because I say fuck a lot. You know, that's me. This is me. This is how I express myself. You don't like me? And that's one of the good things that, you know, I came to understand about. I like myself. If you don't like me, that's okay. I like me. I love me. And it's through this fellowship and you people that I got this way. And I remember Jeanette Acuno, Pepe's wife, you know, I remember Terry, we just try to stay on the natch. Live on the natch, don't use drugs. Man, that woman was like 36 years clean when she died, and you know, she died of cancer, just like Jimmy and a lot of other people. And she was like she was like my NA mom. Mm-hmm. I would go over to the house, she'd feed me cookies and pies, and tell me I was incorrigible to stay away from the sponsees. You know, I love this fellowship. Anybody else? Thank you.